My name is Jasmine Temblador. I'm the interviewer, and I'm here with Charlotte Lurchenmuller, who is the narrator. Today we're meeting at Charlotte's home in Silver Lake, and the date is Saturday, March 23rd, 2019. Just a brief scope of the interview, so I'll be asking you about your experience in relation to the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference, and talking about topics of leadership, culture and traditions, and the legacy in the conference. And the interview is being conducted as part of the Masters of Arts and Cultural Sustainability from Goucher College for this capstone project. So Jasmine, myself, the interviewer, and Charlotte have known each other for about 4.5 years through the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. So now I'm just going to ask you, Charlotte, to for the recording, to state for the recording that you are aware of and consent to being recorded.
I am aware of and I do consent to the recording of this interview.
Great. So first, I just want to thank you for meeting today, and I really appreciate your time. And I'm really excited to learn more about your story and your experience in relation to CYLC.
Well, I'm honored to be able to continue the legacy of Sal Castro and the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference and the importance that it has played, it plays, and will continue to play.
Great. So let's get into it.
Go for it.
So let's start off with just a little bit more about you. So if you can tell me more about where you grew up, your family, your experience.
I'm born in Los Angeles. My parents were both born in Germany. My brother, I had, past tense, one older brother, 11 years older. I grew up in what is now called Montecito Heights. It's actually Lincoln Heights. I went to public school, Los Angeles Unified, Latona Avenue, Luther Burbank Jr., and Franklin High School. I started at LA State. I continued at California State College at Los Angeles. I graduated from California State University at Los Angeles. I've got a BA in social science history option, a minor in physical education so I could get a job. I wanted to be a teacher from the fifth grade on, and I started everything with the focus of being a teacher. I taught at El Sereno Junior High. I taught girls PE because I could get a job. I couldn't get a job as a social science history teacher. I have been a counselor, grade level counselor, for Los Angeles Unified, three different types of assistant principal, and I retired as a middle school principal. I have a master's in counselor education, and I've got three different types of credential: teaching, counseling, and administrative. And I worked for LAUSD for 38 years. So I've been on the public dole since I'm the age of 4.5.
Wow, that's an extensive experience you have there.
Yeah, I guess so. I've been at, I've taught on the east side, I've taught in South Central, and I've worked on the west side. So, although I did work in the valley when I was working youth services, so I guess I've covered almost all of east of Los Angeles Unified. Right now, I am retired, but I work as a consultant for the Associated Administrators of Los Angeles, which is the Administrators Union.
Amazing. Okay. So what is your relationship to the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference?
I hung out with a man named Sal Castro, and it was through him that I became involved with the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. I was on the periphery. I was not as involved during Sal's lifetime as I am now, that he is well, he's dead. I'm not going to say he passed on, he's dead. And I would be the person, when he was still alive and it was still going strong, I would be the person that would, I need such and such, so I would go get it and make sure he had whatever it was he needed to help put on the conference. I had no involvement whatsoever with the actual putting on of the conference. That was Sal, and that was the board, that was all of the volunteers. They did all the heavy lifting. I was the one that if you needed to have something run off, I ran it off. If you needed this, I went and got that. So it wasn't until after Sal died that I really, really got involved. We started about probably, we maybe 9 months after he died, we started the process of developing the Sal Castro Foundation. And it was a very deliberate process. We had a facilitator who worked with Robin Avilar LaSalle, Myrna Brudy, and Paula Crisostomo. The four of us were the core, and a woman named Marty Maya was our facilitator who walked us through the steps. And we have four areas. One is legacy. The major focus of the foundation is the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. Another aspect is fundraising. And then the fourth aspect is communication. Each one of us, Robin, Paula, Myrna, and myself, were in charge of one of those four areas. And we had a subcommittee made up, and everything is very specific in the bylaws, in the focus, in the what we're going to do. And it was from there that we were then able to go and I guess it was probably October. Well, let's go September, August of 2014, where we got funding. My belief is people were feeling a little guilty because Sal was dead and so was the conference. And it's a shame that his death is what spurred people to get back for the conference. And then we had the first conference in October of 2014. It had been dark from about spring of 2009. Then I've become much more involved with it. And that's a long answer for a short question.
And you're also the president of I'm also the foundation.
Widow Castro gets to be the president. Paula is the treasurer. Myrna is the secretary. And Robin is the, I guess we're going to say, the vice chairperson of it. So it's all, we were in charge of four different things, and now we're there. And the board of directors consists of the four of us, Armando Duron, and then Sal's two sons, Gil Castro, Jim Castro.
Wow. So what was the experience like starting the conference back up in 2014?
Well, we were very fortunate in the fact that there were people who were around, who knew what to do. And we didn't change one form, one bit. The format, had been successful for when Sal was running it, so we stayed with the same format. The faces may change a little bit, but what is done on each day of the conference continued. And the decision from the board of directors was that keep it the way it is, and if it needs to be tweaked, we'll tweak it. And the first conference in October of 2014 was a little squeaky and a little bumpy because there was a tremendous amount of grief associated with that conference. hey, this was the first one that was being done without him, and whoa, that was a little tough, a lot tough for folks. And it was bumpy, but the strength of what we were doing and the strength and the belief in what we were doing got us through it, and we came out on the other end much better. And we're going to smooth this out, we're going to smooth that out, and it's now a very well-oiled machine.
I think you all did a really great job.
Well, it's, you know, it was one of these things that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And Sal had really, really put it into good order. And so I think that's a, I want to use the word compliment. Yeah, I'll use the word compliment to his belief in keeping it and doing it the way he felt it should be done. And so plus I don't want to listen to him if we change anything. He'll come back and haunt.
So you talked a little bit about there's a structure, there's a format to the conference. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that looks like?
Well, Friday is, you know, icebreaker. Kids don't want to be there. What the heck did I get into? So it's sort of easing them into. And so Friday is just sort of more general about what. And there's a little cultural, there's a little historical, but it's easing into the conference itself. Saturday is devoted specifically, theme of the conference is don't be, you know, no sean mensos, go to college and graduate. So the focus is truly, truly, truly college. We've got five strands. We've got a cultural strand. We've got a historical strand. We've got a networking strand. We've got a college strand. And for the life of me, I cannot remember the fifth strand. It will come to me. But and each thing, everything we do falls under one of those strands. And So the real, real push is to go to school and to graduate. And the other thing is, by the time you hit a kid in the 12th grade, it's too late. The 11th grade is, in the principal's exchange report, says it's the right time with the right push, with the right emphasis, with the right presentations to hook kids into. So 11th grade is, they're smelling graduation. They're not there yet. And this plants the seed so that college and doing what you need to do, and it's not too late to change if you need to change what you're doing in school and become more committed with a much better focus. So that's the format on Saturday. And then there's always cultural, there's always fun stuff, there's reflection, and that's why the facilitators are so very important, that they are able to bring the kids into and hold on to discussions. And then Sunday is sort of culmination and summing up of what went on. And those kids that didn't want to, you know, growling, why am I here, are crying, I don't want to go. So we call it the miracle of Malibu, and it truly is. And we're only doing it in 2.5 days, not even a full 2.5 days. We don't spend a week. Some of these conferences go on for a week. We're doing it in 2.5 days. And it's in and out real fast, real concentrated, and a barrage, a total barrage from all angles, all angles. And don't let kids be in the same groups that are at the same school. Break them up so they can start that networking, so they can find out who else is around. And what they're going to be embarking on is not easy. Life ain't easy. It's a contact sport.
It sounds like there's a lot of trust that happens in that short amount of time.
I think so. And we refer to it as they're drinking the Kool-Aid. It happens each conference. It happens earlier and earlier and sooner. Sometimes the first couple conferences, it took them until Saturday to start drinking the Kool-Aid. But the last few conferences, it's almost as if they've started drinking the Kool-Aid as they're walking into the conference, because they're ready to go and they're on board. They're on board. And it's like, you know, show me more, show me more.
So in thinking about traditions of the conference, things that have continued, what do you think are the traditions that have continued and are still being continued today in the conference?
Well, the focus of going to school, that's proven with the principal exchange report, where 84% of the kids, and we're talking 11th graders, that go to the conference, go to, and more importantly, graduate from college, 84%. That's a big deal. That is a real, real big deal. The cultural of being proud of who you are and being taught who folks are and names that they may not know, but by the time they leave, they know. The fact that they're in a historic spot with California history and with United States history, so that there's the historical concept. There are the music, I talk about in that UCLA things, 1968, kids wouldn't be caught dead speaking Spanish. Now it's back and forth. It is a truly bilingual, bicultural. Kids are comfortable, and they are more comfortable in their skin when they leave. And, okay, here's the fifth strand, community responsibility. That's the fifth strand. Yes, it's fun to go and be around people, but you have a responsibility to come back to your community, to make your community a better spot. And there is a responsibility. It's just not, there's no free lunch when you go to the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference.
So why has it been important to celebrate or have workshops around identity and culture?
Because they don't get it in school. There used to be Chicano studies or Mexican American studies in high school, Black studies. And then it went by the wayside. Now it's called ethnic studies, coming back. It will be very watered down. I guarantee you, it will be very watered down. United States history is not taught with all of the different strands, the different streams that come into making it. My good God, you know, fighting Nazism in Orange County. People thought that was over. Oh, no, it ain't. The racism that is so prevalent, especially now, you can't like other people until you like yourself. And when you like yourself, then you can like and be open to other people. So that's one of the important aspects of what we do. So We're not speaking to only you, but what we're saying is open up and be aware and be accepting of others as once you have accepted who you are.
It seems to be something that is also shared early on. Do you think that contributes to students today drinking the Kool-Aid sooner?
You know, I think it's because they're thirsty and they're hungry because they don't have it. And we're fulfilling a need that the school district hasn't recognized, and we're giving kids an avenue to be able to be proud of who they are and walk into it with heads high and walk out of it with heads even held higher.
That's wonderful.
I think so too. It's when you listen at the end to what when the nations are reflecting on what it had meant, what it meant to them, they'll say, "I didn't know this and I didn't know that. Now I do, and I'm very proud of who I am." And you know, "Viva la raza, Chicano power." The hills in Camp Hess Kramer echo with it. The Jewish camp is contributing to Chicano power and Viva la Raza. So yeah. Now it's a heartwarming, mind-boggling experience to listen to the kids talk. And they leave out, like I said, they leave out of there better about who they are and what they are and how they can become contributing members of society. And I'm going to, one other thing, Rita Ledesma in her Sunday morning as part of the reflection talks about the seventh generation, that when you're doing something, yes, it's now, but you have to think in the Native American thinking pattern is that what you're doing now is important, but you're also doing something for the seventh generation. It's just not now. It's further on down. And I would say we're probably in the fifth generation from when the conference started in 1963. And it's the granddaddy of all conferences. There are others around, but this one is the original. And so probably in the fifth generation. So now we're almost to the seventh generation.
And more planning to go.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And that's the cool part of it. The sustainability that there are people who are still coming in. And it's not a hard sell. I don't have, when I'm getting people to come for the, here's a tweak that we did, the career fair. We talk about on Saturday, college, financial aid, filling out an application, where do you want to go? But more importantly is what do you want to be when you grow up? And so that was a tweak that I added with the career fair. I don't have problems getting people to come. I don't have problems to get the people to speak. They're in. The adults are in, and I think that's communicated to the kids when the adults are talking to the that the kids can see that these are people, and I'm talking about both speakers and career fair presenters. These are people that most importantly look like the kids who have got, and the kids can see that these people went through. And so I've got some folks that are my images that I can identify with. And they can identify with me, which is really a thumbs up, really a thumbs up.
So the career fair is an addition to the conference.
Yeah, that's it's probably about 3 years old.
Wow.
So
what was the thinking behind bringing the career fair into the conference?
Well, again, it's we tell you about college, but now you need to know what you can do with. Maybe you never thought, you know, doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, those are real common. But when you have somebody who is a screenwriter, when you have somebody who comes in and is a dentist and looks like you, and a screenwriter that looks like you and has got a last name similar to yours, that opens up and gives you other avenues to think about, so that you could, piquing their interest. And again, they're 11th graders. Things aren't in cement yet. Things are in sand, fluid.
So everyone in the conference is volunteer.
Absolutely.
So it's been sustained on the backs of volunteers for
over 50 years. Yes, since the very beginning.
Why has it been important for it to be an all-volunteer-based conference?
Because if you're paying somebody, they're doing it for money. And there's a big difference between doing something for money and doing something because you're committed and you believe in it. And besides, there's no budget. But the commitment. And the belief of doing it, and it's that's what really really makes it phenomenal.
And I know that the students also know that everyone is there voluntarily
because they want to be there. They're not there because you have to be there. They're there because they want to be there. Yeah.
Such an important thing to have, volunteers who are committed and want to be there for the students. And I'm sure everyone gains in some way.
Well, you know, we probably get more out of it than the kids do, just for the fact that we can see when we can see the light go on, and we can see the spirit that and the fire in the belly that's lit. That is really, really, really satisfying and keeps you going, keeps you going.
So it seems that there are so many great things that have been happening since the conference started back up again in 2014. Have there been any, has the conference ever faced any challenges over time that you know?
The challenges have always been, is there going to be a conference? And the monetary support, that's been the big challenge. You know, I've only been doing this now for 4 years, 5 years. And sometimes it's very, very frustrating. And Sal did this for 50 years plus, and button your head up against the wall every so often, and that is what really is indelible in my mind about his total commitment to this, and in adversity, the stick-to-itness that he had, because he knew he was right and he believed in it, and you just did it. And we've run into some problems, but you know, we have no problem getting kids to go to the conference. We have an abundance. There were conferences when he used to have to call, "Don't you have a Mexican that you can send?" You know, I'm sure I have a friend, a girlfriend who was a principal at Franklin, and she says, "I got a phone call from Sal Castro," and he says, And he said, oh, Sheridan, come on, in Highland Park, you can't find me two Mexicans?
So interesting.
And, no, and, but sometimes there were as few as 70 kids. We have no problem getting a, we have to sort of cut it off because we have hit a nerve. And that nerve says we're needed.
Why do you think it was so difficult to get more students back
then? Well, at one time, it wasn't cool. And Sal is now an accepted person. We laugh when we did a thing on the walkouts. He was referred to as legendary teacher Sal Castro. Legendary teacher Sal Castro wasn't always viewed as legendary teacher Sal Castro. Rabble-rousal troublemaker Sal Castro was more of the view at one time. And so that might have been part of it. But, you know, God knows. Stupidity has no explanation.
Now you have so many students who are applying for the conference. Mm-hmm. There's about 100 students.
We go 100 to 110 is an ideal number. 120, we're pushing it. Mm-hmm. It's just, and you wonder, what's the difference of 10 more kids? The difference is 10 more kids. And so, but it's kids and the decision as who can go and who can't go. And the other thing is we're drawing kids from all over the school district, which is excellent. Whereas at the beginning, it was sort of like just an East Side thing, you know. So now it's total... We've got kids from the Valley, we've got kids from the Harbor, we've got East Side, we've got Central City, we've got Northeast. So, yeah, we're able to pull West Side also. So, yeah.
In our pre-interview, you mentioned that the conference is like a mom and pop.
Yeah, right? Mom and pop. Because we're, everybody's free other than the cost of Camp Hess Kramer, other than the cost of the, now we've got flash drives, other than the cost of buses, other than the cost of the people who are working beyond the bell or on beyond the bell salary when they're doing it. So we don't have an office. We're doing things in addition to what we're normally doing in life. So it's not okay, now I'm going to go to work for Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. It's filling it in. And so that's the mom and pop aspect of it. If we were corporate, meaning that there was a paid director, that there was a paid staff, I don't know if it would change, but and then you would have to be beholden to whoever was paying. So you would lose control of what you do and how you do it and when you do it. Makes sense?
Definitely makes sense, yes. It provides more understanding on why Sal Castro didn't want to go corporate.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking now about Sal's vision for the conference. Has the conference, would you say, remained true to Sal's vision?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that when you looked at the various agendas, programs, we're doing what got probably instituted in the late 90s. And it's got his fingerprints all over it.
I noticed that at different times of the conference, Sal sat on different committees.
Yeah.
As he kept being involved.
Yeah, he would he started as a facilitator back in 1963, and he was always a part of it, always a part of it. And it was important. It was very, very important to him. And yes, the walkouts were important. I'm not gonna, but CYLC was more important to him because of the seventh generation aspect of the change within the kids who went there. Walkouts were important. There were tremendous changes, and it took 50 years for some of those changes. But you've got kids that are going to college. That change is much more immediate.
So how would you describe the vision in your own words?
My word? Okay. It's, well, number one, legacy of Sal Castro. CYLC is his baby, his legacy. But the awakening in kids of who they are and what they can become, and carrying what they can become by maintaining and respecting who they are. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's beautiful.
And a little bit of Sal is in all of them.
In all the students or yeah. In all the conferences?
No, in all the students. Because what they come out with is because of what he did and is and was.
I've definitely heard students share, they feel like they got to know Mr. Castro. They feel like they got to know more about the students in 1968.
Yeah.
They feel a grander connection.
Yeah.
And gratitude for
learning that. Yeah. Because stuff that everybody takes for granted now didn't exist, and it was through Sal talks about the kids of 1968, that they were not doing it for themselves, they were doing it for future. And again, I'm going to tie it back to that seventh generation, that there was a focus and a belief in the future. And hey, it didn't happen overnight. You know, things that happen overnight usually don't last. The slow, incremental change is the lasting change, is the sustainable change.
So why Camp Hess Kramer? What contributes to the power of this place?
Well, it's my understanding that, the first conference happened on Palm Sunday. And the joint was open, and they were there. And then it just continued. And I think the roots of the conference started in Camp Hess Kramer and continued. The one year that they didn't go there, and that was in the 90s sometime. Paula will know more about it. But I do remember Soka University, and it's off of Malibu Canyon Road. It's to the left. It just wasn't the same. And Sal said, our spirit is that, the belief, and this is where we started, and our roots are here. So that's why Camp Hess Kramer and the importance of it. And it's a mutual admiration society. The folks at Hess Kramer that we were dealing with, easy peasy, back and forth. They knew what we were doing and what had been done, and it just continues. It just continues. And that's also a good thing because the folks up there, Bhatti, who ran the cafeteria, John Bard, who ran the camp, Maria Brewer. They all had worked with Sal, and so it was just, you know, keep on stepping, and just, it wasn't anything that had to be reinvented. It just continued. So there's something about tradition and ritual, and it's rather traditional and rather ritualistic. But it's not all in cement. Changes can happen, and an ebb and flow, I guess, is the best way.
It sounds like there's a really great relationship that's been built over time with camp staff.
Yeah, and Sal was a real people person, and a very, very personable. But if things didn't go right, you knew it. But he never accepted half-assedness. It always had to be the very best, and top drawer, class act.
Do you think that translated over to everyone who was working at the conference as well?
Of course. Of course. But if he wasn't pleased, he didn't berate publicly. It was behind the scenes. Never, never chewed anybody out publicly if they needed to be chewed out. But were spoken to and changed.
So how has your participation in the conference changed over time? I know in the early days, we talked about you creating PowerPoints for some of the presentation.
Yeah. Technology. Here, I'll show you how. This is one of the things. Music was always very important in Sal's life. And there are tape decks and reel-to-reel stuff over time. And there was music, always music. Music of, if it was 1994, there would be 1994 music along with traditional music. So that was one of the first things he would do. And it went from reel to reel to cassette to CD. And now everything is off of somebody's phone.
Digital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one change. They used to drive around on, the AV stuff. There's this huge old television in storage that I'm going to have to ask somebody to throw away in some dump. Those notebooks that they were bent over carrying. Now everything's on a flash drive. Those are real obvious. The belief system, the why we're doing it, what we're doing has been consistent all the way through. How we're doing it is what's changed. And that's through technology, and that's through coming into the 21st century.
It's much needed small changes. Yeah.
And nobody gets pissed off over that. Nobody gets pissed off over that because it makes the delivery much. But there's also the something else that doesn't change is the touching, the human relationships, the relationship building. Those are aspects that have continued from the very, very beginning. There's a guy named Armando Duron who is, he went to the conference in 1972. He went to Garfield High School. And he'll tell you, this was life-changing for me. And he is a commissioner in the Superior Court. And folks will tell you it was truly life-changing.
What would you say are the ingredients that are essential to the longevity of the conference?
A belief, knowing who you are, a commitment, and use the word trust. Oh, and no egos. No egos. Because egos can't, if somebody's ego gets involved, and relationships, that, I think, is what keeps it going. And people like each other. You can't you can't beat that with a stick.
There seems to be a real sense of connection of everyone who's working. It's just synchronized.
And just in and out, in and out. It's, I can't do such and such, but you can. You can't do so and so, but I can. So you do such and such, and I do so and so, and we get it done.
And everyone's happy.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And everybody, I believe, feels comfortable to be able to express opinions and beliefs. And like I said, I don't think everything is in cement. Now, there are some things that are in cement that we do this because, and if you don't have the belief and if you don't have the trust, if you don't have the commitment, have a nice time. Go someplace else. Mm-hmm. But we didn't think such and such, we didn't think this worked so well. How can we tweak it? Let's figure it out. And if it can't be tweaked, then why are we bothering? And what we do is proven. It's successful and it's proven.
You see it on the students' faces.
Oh, goodness, absolutely, absolutely.
Are there any memorable stories that you can share from your time with CYLC or any favorite stories that you have?
Favorite stories. I, you know, I guess the favorite thing is the fact that I wish I wasn't doing it. Let's just be very obvious. I wish I wasn't doing this. And the reason I'm doing it is because Sal's dead. If I wouldn't be doing this, if he were still alive. So, I wish I didn't have to, and it's truly I have to, because I owe it. It's my responsibility. And I would prefer if I weren't, but I'm doing it and I'm loving doing it. So that's the personal side of it. And I enjoy being around people who are like-minded. And that's another thing that is so cool, is that we're like-minded. If we're talking, it's like we're talking to the choir, preaching to the choir. And the choir doesn't need to be preached to because they're believers.
So it sounds like every conference is a memorable, fun.
Every conference, like I said, it's a well-oiled machine now. And you want to be there because you want to see something that works and the beauty of it. Now, we've got to figure out what we're going to do in fall. And that's something that we're working, and we'll make it happen. And we may not have it at Hess Kramer, but wherever we have it will be as good as we can get it without being at Hess Kramer. And we'll figure that one out. And it always seems to, it will happen because it has in the past and it will continue. But we can't take anything for granted.
What was it like to be back at Camp Hess Kramer after the fire? What was it like to walk through?
Very sad. Very, very sad. And the sadness was knowing that what we were doing couldn't be done. That was the sadness. That was the sadness. Also knowing that we weren't dead. We were on pause. We were on pause. We will start again. The pause button was pushed, and not because of anything that was done purposely. It was pushed because of circumstance.
But it shall continue.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Phoenix from the ashes.
So the students go through so many different workshops and a lot of relationship building with each other. And you mentioned, you know, people start to get it sooner and sooner.
Yeah.
When do you think, from what you've seen, is that moment, that aha moment where the students just...
Probably when they see the movie Walkout.
What do you see in their faces?
I don't watch the movie. I can't stand the movie.
And why do you think it's after the movie?
Because they can see kids who are like them, who have done something. And that the realization that kid power is powerful.
And their voices are important.
Uh-huh.
It does make a lot of sense because for some of the students, it might be the first time that they're hearing about this part of history.
Oh, Magby is.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a woman who works as a field rep for Sheila Kuhl, the supervisor. And the woman's name is Benita Trujillo. And she had seen something on PBS. And she said, you know, I never knew this happened. And this woman is 59 years old.
Wow.
And she says, now I want to know more. Okay, guess what? Came to the right place? Came to the right place, yeah.
Will we be seeing her involved in the conference?
You know you will. You know you will.
So, what has the conference meant to you?
Well, I'm keeping Sal alive, his legacy alive. And doing what he wanted to be done. Doing what he wanted to be done. And continuing what he wanted to be done.
When you're observing the conference and attending some of the workshops or even presenting, because you present at the conference, what are you observing? What do you see happening?
I'm seeing some, as you referred to it, lights going on. Kids being more comfortable about being who they are, learning about who they are, and knowing that we're doing God's work.
So what's the key? What above all else defines the conference? What makes it special?
The spirit and the people, the spirit that is in the people. That the common link is the belief in what we're doing is important, but more importantly, worthwhile.
What would you say leadership is in your own words?
Leadership is not being afraid to do something that may not be totally accepted, but you know it's right, and you do it. And also, leadership is knowing that something isn't working, and trying to fix it, or this isn't what we want, so we're not going to do it.
It takes a lot of...
And not being afraid to continue to do what it is you're doing. Because sometimes it takes a while for whatever the idea is to take root and to spark.
So why has leadership, it's the Chicano Youth Leadership Conference. Why has leadership building been an important part of the conference?
Because there is a void of brown faces in decision making, and we need brown faces to be decision makers and to be proud of being a brown face.
There's a lot of inspiration, a lot of the students become inspired. They're seeing brown faces at the conference. They're seeing people high positions, sitting there at the career fair with them. So they're seeing that representation.
They're able to see people that, wait a minute, Rudy Monterosa, when he's there, will say, you know, I was able to see people whose last names ended in a vowel. And that they're to add to the number of brown faces, and brown faces who believe in what of who they are and why they are and that they count.
How do you feel when you start to see people return to the conference as volunteers?
Oh, that's the best thing in the world. This past time we had Savannah Pierce, Nurse Pierce's daughter. She was kicking and screaming when she came as an 11th grader. Oh, and now she's back. Oh my goodness, that is so. And to we had three or four kids from 4 years ago come back. Oh my God. They drank the lemonade, they drank the Kool-Aid, and now they want to pass it out. That's the best. That is absolutely the best.
I have noticed you add all the names.
Oh, absolutely. So they can see that your name can be here. Absolutely, absolutely. Because that's volumes. That speaks volumes.
And you know that those students went to college and graduated?
Oh, absolutely. And here we are. And as a facilitator, I still may be in college, but I'm going to college. Okay? Yeah.
So now thinking about today, what's happening now, what are some of the issues that you've noticed or that you've heard, you know, the students talk about that are impacting them today?
Well, the fact that the President of the United States considers them rapists and murderers and drug dealers and of no worth whatsoever, and it's being lapped up by all of these white supremacists, and you don't have to be a white supremacist, it's being lapped up by as an easy out as to why I don't need to do something. After Rita did her presentation the October 2018 conference. Right after she was done, I went up to her and Robin went up to her and said, I'm afraid. I haven't been afraid in I don't know how long, and I'm afraid. And I'm the last person in the world who needs to be afraid, and I'm afraid. Because Now, it's a scary, scary world, a very scary world. And these young folks are probably innocent enough not to know to be afraid. But, oh my goodness, these are not good times. These are not good times.
It sounds like it's been a great opportunity, even during these times, for the students who have come to the conference the last couple of years.
Because they're getting an inner strength of knowing who they are and being proud of who they are, so they don't have to question themselves. They can utilize that strength to overcome. They're not going to overcome, but to help get through. That's to get through.
Especially in these times.
Yeah, God, yeah.
They're able to network with other
students. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's strength in numbers.
What do you believe is the reason why an event that happened a half a century ago still has a continuing resonance today?
Because there's a void, and it fills a void, and it helps guide, and it helps motivate. And just because it's 50 years old doesn't mean that, it's more than 50 years old, 63. What are we talking about? I can't do that math up. So it's close to 60 years. Let's just use that. It's more than 50. It's a continuity, and it's a motivator. It's a motivator.
Thinking about sustainability has really been coming up in our conversation a lot. When you think about the future, how do you see the legacy continuing through CYLC?
People like you, because I ain't going to be around.
People continuing to stay
involved. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The buzzwords, capacity building. Okay. Sal, I remember... people were, he would get phone calls. Can you come and speak? Can you do this? Can you do that? And he would say, I think it's more important that you do it, because I'm going to come and I'm going to leave. You're going to be there. And so that was his way. He wasn't shirking it. He was listening. He was giving ideas. But building capacity so that, you know, it was only one of him, and that's the other thing, one of him, and, you know, building other people to do and to continue. So, yeah, capacity building, and that's what you guys are with the facilitators and the staff. That's our lifeblood, because I ain't going to be around. And it's going to be, the need is going to be with those folks who have the same vision and belief system.
And why is sustainability of CYLC important for the future generations?
So that the mistakes of the past aren't made. And we're seeing many of those mistakes from what we've got in the White House right now. Mm-hmm. And they're not mistakes. These are not mistakes. These are carefully thought out. And I sound like a conspiracy theorist, but no. These are earmarked to breed discontent and to just turn something good, like a democracy and a constitution, into something bad. And CYLC needs to continue to counteract evil. And that's, it's evil. I'm sorry.
So it's clear to me that the conference has been a source of empowerment, motivation, connecting people to their identity, culture, and also for educational opportunities. What is your view on that?
Say that again. I didn't hear that. What is my what?
What is your view on that?
The fact that, I'm just going to be real, real materialistic. Somebody who's got a college education makes more money than somebody who doesn't have a college education. Just like a high school diploma is something that you want to have, but it's only a ticket to get into something else. And when you have a democracy is dependent upon an educated electorate. And if you keep people dumb and you keep people poor, then you're never going to be anything. You'll be the downtrodden and you'll be the service industry. But if you've got a college education, you will be able to have more money to contribute to the betterment of yourself, of your family, and society. So you can't take knowledge away from people. That's something, once you've learned something, it's yours. And it's something that keeps you, I talked about Mother Nature with the green, knowledge keeps regenerating and keeps you alive and keeps you regenerating and keeps you contributing. You know, lifelong learners, all that stuff. But yes, it's absolutely true. You the more you know, the more you want to know, and the more you are able to contribute to around you. And so that's why the education is so important, but also the networking, also the community involvement, also the cultural, also the historical. All of that is what keeps and makes CYLC so important. And so there's a constant rebirth.
It always comes back.
Yeah. I keep looking out the window to see.
Well, we've reached the end of our interview today, and I just want to, again, thank you.
It's a car.
Thank you so much for your time today. And before we click the record button off, I just want to ask for your permission to use the interview today to be able to write the reflection piece.
Certainly.
Thank you so much, Charlotte. I'm going to go ahead and turn it off. Okay.